that I have presented early morning at Feinstein entirely incorrectly.
Which was fine, and then I got back to America, and I had an email from Rabbi Jonathan Ziering in Toronto, an amazing Talmid Chacham who's part of the best and brightest coming out of the Sefer Beit Midrash, in which he sent me one source, one medieval source, which he said was on the same theme and bothered him, and then he said he had a source from Elchanan Wasserman, which said the same thing as Rabbi Feinstein. And I was trying to figure out, wow, that doesn't really say the same thing as Rabbi Feinstein. It says what I think is almost exactly the opposite. And then I realized, so how did he know about the shir? Thank you very much. He had, of course, heard the only recording, which was the yeshiva that I was at Tzvi, where I got Rabbi Feinstein completely wrong. So it was a sort of tshuva for having been careless in that shir. I created a new shir, which is built off the sources Rabbi Ziering sent me, in addition to the original response of Rabbi Feinstein. That's what we're going to do tonight. There's a technical component to the shir, but what I'm really trying to get at is our issues that I think are central in the thinking of many of us now. One is where the idea of being obligated comes from. What does it mean to be obligated by Judaism? What does it mean to be obligated religiously in general? What does it mean to be obligated by halakha? And the second question is to talk about within the halakhic system, what is the basis for laws that are explicitly created by human beings? Right, where do rabbis, sages, or anything, what gives them the right to tell other people what to do? Okay, so those are the underlying issues I want to address. Right, what is it that makes us susceptible to being told what to do in any sense at all? Right? What makes us obligated to do anything other than what it just happens that we want to do right now? And secondly, what is it specifically that allows human beings to have the capacity to legislate and claim that their legislation has religious authority? Okay, so we're going to do this, really, we're going to read just four sources. We're going to start with an medieval source of the Tosafists, so we're somewhere between the 11th and 13th century, somewhere in France or Germany. And just to be background, you have to understand that, just be aware that nothing about this Tosfot is actually halakha, because the Tosfot will be couched within a position that just about everyone agrees is not halakha. Nonetheless, what Tosfot says in his exploration of this position that we do not follow, I think is fascinating philosophically, and you'll see gives rise to a series of philosophic discussions. So here's what the Tosfot says. He starts by quoting a Mishnah. The Mishnah records a dispute as to whether discussion of whether blind people are allowed to lead the recitation of the Shema. For the purposes of this conversation, you have to assume that the recitation of the Shema is something that one person can do on behalf of others, and by reciting the Shema, we mean the Shema and the surrounding blessing. So the anonymous first position in the Mishnah says that blind people may lead the recitation of Shema and translate, but Rabbi Yehuda says that anybody who never saw me'orot in his lifetime, so what are me'orot?
Lights or stars,
okay? Or right, luminaries, I tried to translate it. It's an odd phrase. Anybody who never saw me'orot, luminaries in their life, may not lead the Shema. Okay, what's the connection? Why would we think that if you never saw luminaries in your life, you can't read the Shema? What's the connection between them? Yes, Rafi. Right, because the second bracha of the morning Shema is Yotzer HaMe'orot, the one who creates the luminaries. So we would think that you have to actually see those luminaries in order to be able to lead that recitation. Okay. So Tosfot says that this is problematic. Rabbi Yehuda's claim, or the claim of the Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda said, that people who have never seen the Me'orot in their life can never read the Shema, cannot lead the Shema, is problematic, because there's another Talmudic statement in Bava Kamma, which says Rabbi Yehuda held that blind people are exempt from all commandments. Now, if blind people are exempt from all commandments, then presumably they cannot
Right? Generally, the rule is if you are not obligated, you cannot perform mitzvot for others. So if blind people are exempt from all mitzvot, then blind people should not be able to lead the recitation of the Shema, whether or not they had once been seeing. It shouldn't matter whether you're blind from birth or not. The fact that you're blind should be enough to prevent you from leading this blessing. But the Mishnah we just read said that Rabbi Yehuda only says they can't do it if they have never seen Merot in their life, which suggests that if they were born seeing, that they would be able to lead the Shema. So we have a contradiction within Rabbi Yehuda. So Tosfot has solution number one to this, and he says that the Jerusalem Talmud has a very neat solution to this, which says that never seen Merot in your life, we're jumping into the assumption that means that they're blind. Who says? Maybe it means they were raised in a cave. Could be, they take during the Bar Kokhba revolt or something like that, people have read Paul Auster, whatever it may be. Maybe there were people, or some kind of allusion to Plato, whatever you want. Right? People are raised in a cave. So now we've solved the problem. Rabbi Yehuda holds that blind people cannot lead the Shema, period. And even sighted people cannot read the Shema if they have lived underground all their life. Yes, what's your name? Avi?
In that case, how does Rabbi Yehuda disagree with the Stam Mishnah? Because the Stam Mishnah says a blind person can't do it. Uh-huh. And Rabbi Yehuda is saying, in addition to that,
yes,
something like this.
He's not disagreeing. He's right. If you take this interpretation, he's not disagreeing. He's offering another piece of information. And okay, it says Rabbi Yehuda Omer, not Amar Rabbi Yehuda. So if you had a good teacher, they told you that usually means he disagrees, but not always. Okay, you're right, it's a weakness. Tosfot is not satisfied with the Yerushalmi's answer. And one of their issues is going to be, why is Tosfot not satisfied? After all, the Jerusalem Talmud says it. Why does he need to make up another answer? He has a traditional answer. Tosfot's answer is as follows. He says, one can also say that in fact our Mishnah here is discussing a blind person. And the exemption of a blind person there, when Rabbi Yehuda says over there that a summa, a blind person, is exempt from all mitzvot, what he meant was, biblically, but the blind person is obligated rabbinically. And even someone blind from birth is obligated rabbinically. So I'm going to tell you, right, just because there are two ways of understanding this. I have a preference for one of them. Tell me, what do you understand this claim to be? What is it that a blind person, according to Rabbi Yehuda, as explained by Tosfot, what is it that a blind person has to do rabbinically? Okay, here, Avi, you're the good person for speakers.
It could either mean they only have to recite Kriyat Shema, or it could mean they have to recite Kriyat Shema as bracha, or it could mean they only have to recite as bracha.
So that's very narrow. That means it's only talking about Shema, but Tosfot doesn't suggest that, right, when Tosfot says we're talking about Bava Kama, right? Like Rabbi Yehuda says about all mitzvot, so you can't limit it to Shema. It's the position Rabbi Yehuda holds about that the relationship of the Summa generally is that, right, to all mitzvot, not just Kriyat Shema, is that they are obligated biblically but not rabbinically. Yes, what's your name?
Sam,
yeah.
They are exempt from all biblical mitzvot, but the rabbinic ones, they can do the ones they're able to.
Aha, okay, so we could claim they're exempt from all biblical mitzvot, but obligated in all rabbinic mitzvot. That's one possibility. What's the other one? Yes, what's your name?
Max.
Yeah.
The sense that pops out to me here is that they're obligated to do everything because the rabbinical code sort of encompasses the biblical code and explicates upon it. And you couldn't necessarily do the one without the other. Now, I know that's not necessarily the sense in which it was meant, but I think it's one sense of
aha. So I think you're actually closer than Sam, but you're putting a lot of superstructure onto it,
yeah,
which I don't think is quite so necessary. Somebody have another explanation?
Are you talking specifically about
Tefillah? No, right? Tosfot says when Rabbi Yehuda says that blind people are exempt from all mitzvot, he means that deoraita, but not derabbanan. Yes, what's your name? Also Max, okay, yes?
So they were saying that a blind person is not obligated with a Torah obligation, but is still obligated with a rabbinic obligation for all mitzvot, including Shema.
So I think that is correct.
But then the stretch is to say that someone with the rabbinic obligation could now fulfill the obligation for people who even have a Torah obligation.
Excellent. So we have this claim that the brachot of, we're talking about the mitzvah shema with its brachot, which was only derabanan, ever. Right, the brachot, yes, Rafi. Anything biblical?
Anything biblical, yeah.
Yes, that would be correct. That would be correct. But I am. So here I'm going to put it. We don't rule like Rabbi Yehuda. We rule that blind people are obligated. We don't even care. According to most positions, in most cases, we're not even choshed for that position. We rule that blind people can do any are obligated in all mitzvot and can do them. But what's interesting to me is this claim that Tosfot makes, which is that there is a category of people whom the Torah says are exempt from all commandments, and the rabbi said, what? We're going to, everything, every obligation the Torah took away from them, we're going to put back. Now, that's an astonishing claim. Right? The Torah goes out of its way, right, and Rabbi Yehuda derives it, right, by, you know, from a biblical verse, how he gets there is not our issue, and, right, and the rabbis are just undoing the Torah's exemption. And Tosfot says this, he has no evidence of this really, because the contradiction can be resolved by putting people in caves, right? By putting people in caves. So my suggestion is there must be something that really pushes Tosfot to this position, and in fact he tells you it. He tells you the position is so that he not be like a Nachri, he not be like a non-Jew, and that the Jewish religion not apply to him at all. And he goes out of his way to say, don't think that this is parallel to the exemption of women from some mitzvot, because women are exempt from some mitzvot, but not others. Women are obligated in the vast majority of mitzvot. But if you held like Rabbi Yehuda, blind people would be exempt from all mitzvot, and that, Tosfot says, is intolerable. The rabbis would have found that intolerable. Anybody making the claim that blind people are exempt from mitzvot must mean that only d'oraita, but they would, right, but they would immediately create rabbinic obligations to fill the vacuum. Okay, yes, Rafi. So, right, so we have a bunch of levels of questions, right? First of all, where do the rabbis come off doing this? And secondly, does it accomplish what it's supposed to accomplish? Right, or is it just window dressing? Right, you want to feel Jewish, so we'll give you some, right. So we'll make pretend that you're obligated. All right. So question number one is what? So I really have three levels. The first level is what is it that bothers Tosfot so much? Why can't you just say that blind people get to live with perfect autonomy, all their mitzvot are chosen, right? Or if we wanted to be very current, right? Blind people are postmodern Jews. Everything they do, right, is everything they do is a matter of choice. They have no obligation to do otherwise, and it's the perfect world. They all sit around all day having somebody read Rosh Hagar to them. We could just set up the world in a perfect way that way. So what is it that bothers Tosfot so much? Right? What makes Tosfot so upset by the notion that a people. Nobody's saying right now that they can't do mitzvot, just saying they won't be obligated. So to do that, Tosfot allocates to the rabbis enormous power, and we're not even sure at the end of it that even exercising that power is sufficient. Yes, Ben?
Do they just not trust the individual to carry on responsibility?
They don't trust the individual. So we could say, right, that they're afraid of what's going to happen because complacent. Boy, you're a good person. You can imagine, like, if people don't have mitzvot, what they're going to do is they're going to sit, they're not going to go to Minyan.
I mean, that seems like that's the problem.
That's the real concern. Take away all sense of obligation from people, what you get is people who don't go to Minyan.
I've seen it happen
too. That's the worst you can imagine. There's this amazing scene in the first Father Brown mystery by G.K. Chesterton, in which there's this famous criminal, and you know he's about to escape, and Father Brown catches up with him, and the criminal says, "No, it's too late for me. I can't do tshuva. I've done too many horrible things." And Father Brown says, "Have you heard of this and this and this?" And it turns out the criminal's never heard of this. I say, "You're fine." You're fine. If the worst, if all of Torah were taken away from you, what happened is you would show up to Binyan less often. I am very impressed with it. Yes, Sam.
I think they worry that if they took away all of this stuff, people would be confused. You can't expect everyone to understand everything, and these rules give a clear guidance on how to live your life. So these people would be always going to the rabbi, well, rabbi, what do I do?
Uh-huh.
They wouldn't know which ones to fulfill and which ones not to.
So it's designed to, it's a pragmatic thing, either because they're confused and that's not fair, or because rabbis just don't have the time to answer questions from people all the time. So the first one's really interesting because you're assuming that there's still something they have to do. All right. So right, each of you have the interest, right? You're assuming they still have something they have to do. They just won't know what it is without halacha. And you're assuming that if we take away all of halacha, then right, then you know that they won't develop spiritually to their utmost. Okay. What I'm going to read you now is a work called the Sefer HaMachria. If you turn to page 2. This is a source Rabbi Ziering sent me that he said bothered him a great deal, although I suspect it will bother you for different reasons than it bothered him. Sefer HaMachria is a medieval work by Rabbi Shaya Ditrani. For those of you who have heard of the Tosfos Reed, I think this is the same person, although there were many other people by the same name. Italy, late 13th, early 14th century. So here's what he writes. He's interested in, believe it or not, in a question that was prevalent already in the 12th and 13th century, which is, when women do mitzvot asei shehazman grama, even though they're not obligated, are they allowed to make brachot? Okay, so in contemporary halakha, yes. What's your name?
Well, I don't know if the question is meant to be answered.
So the halakha we know nowadays, you're going to tell me, right? What's the halakha nowadays? It's the difference between Sfarim and Ashkenazim. Exactly right. All right, the Ashkenazi position was championed by Rabbeinu Tam. And Rabbeinu Tam brought a number of proofs. One of his proofs was the following. There is a story in the Talmud in which Rabbi Yosef, who is blind, says initially, if anybody can tell me that Rabbi Yehuda is right and blind people are exempt from mitzvot, I'll throw them a party. Because he thinks that he'll be more religiously fulfilled that way because he'll be able to do mitzvot autonomously and voluntarily. But then he hears a statement of Rabbi Hanina which says it's better to be commanded than not. And he says, you know what, I'll throw a party if anybody tells me Rabbi Yehuda is wrong and that I am commanded. Rabbi Natan comes along and says, so Rabbi Yosef would have thrown a party had he been told he were not commanded. Would we imagine that Rabbi Yosef would throw a party if he were told he could never make Birkot HaMitzvah again? Of course Rabbi Yosef would never throw a party if he couldn't make Birkot HaMitzvah. Therefore, it must be that even according to the position that blind people cannot perform mitzvot, they are allowed to make brachot. Therefore, just like blind people would be allowed to make brachot if they were not commanded, therefore women can. This is Rabbeinu Tam's, right? This is one of the rare times where halacha is the proof for halacha is whether you would throw a party or not. Yes.
Because we were commanded to keep the mitzvah, we could, in theory, be at a greater level than Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, but because they weren't commanded at all, not rabbinically, not biblically,
So you think it's just unfair to blind people not to give them the chance to have that kind of reward?
More or less.
Okay, I'm fine with that. I don't really need a rationale. Right, I'm moving on to brachot now. So this is the proof from part. Now you can decide this proof for Rabbeinu Tam is compelling. Rabbeinu Tam thought it was, or you can say it's the moral equivalent of the proof that Yaakov wore a shtreimel. We all know the proof that Yaakov wore a shtreimel. It says Yaakov went out. Would Yaakov have gone out without a shtreimel? This is essentially the same form of argument, right? Would Rabbi Yosef have been happy without brachot? Whatever. Okay. Rabbeinu Tam brings this argument. It was taken seriously. The Sefer HaMachria takes the argument seriously but says it's wrong. Okay, and our issue is to figure out why it's wrong. Steve, you do have a sign-up sheet circulating, right?
Not.
Okay. Now is a good time, usually this is probably where people are interested, so it's a good time to sign up for the email list, the Dvarturas, and all the programs. At the end, you can come over and cross it out if I talk too long. But we'd rather get you signed up now. Yes, Rafi?
I guess I think that, how can you be a Jew in the, I guess, Alaskan community that observing all that? Are you viewed as, I think that that's often, although it's kind of a modern idea, it still is very, relevant to what we're talking about.
There are very few new issues. Yeah, that's all right. That's all right. What defines you as a Jew? We're going to get to there. Exactly. Right? It's going to be a central issue. What defines you as a Jew? Okay. So the Sefer HaMakriya says, you cannot bring proof about the issue of women making blessings from blind people. Why? Because all blind people, even though they are exempt from these mitzvot d'oraita, they're still obligated to Rabbanan. And you're allowed to make brachot and mitzvot d'Rabbanan. We all make brachot on Hanukkah and Megillah, which are mitzvot Rabbanan, and we still say Asher Kishana mitzvotav v'tzivanu. Okay. But now he says, hang on a sec. How could the rabbis tell this person that they have to keep mitzvot that they're not obligated in? There's a verse in the Torah that says you're not allowed to add to the Torah. And what that means in technical halachic terms is not that you're not allowed to add new mitzvot, it's that you're not allowed to do mitzvot as an obligation when you're not obligated. That's his definition. You can't do mitzvot as an obligation when you're not obligated. And therefore, he says, really, you should never be able to make brachot on mitzvot you're not obligated in, because that would be a violation of Baal Tosif. When you say Vitzivanu, you are adding to the Torah. So why is it? How could the rabbis make blind people do this? So he has a very solution. He says, Mishum de lo avar b'Baal Tosif, blind people who do mitzvot are not violating Baal Tosif. Why? The holo mifkad hu b'Baal Tosif, because after all, Baal Tosif is in the Torah, but it's a mitzvah in the Torah, not to add. But blind people are exempt from all mitzvot in the Torah. Therefore, blind people are exempt from the prohibition of adding to the Torah. So the rabbis can't make blind people obligated, because why not? This is where Mizuri went a little, he said, what? We're going to obligate people to keep the whole Torah because they're not obligated in adding to the Torah? Every time you do a mitzvah, you say, oh, this is fine because I'm not obligated. This obligation is fine because I'm not obligated to not add to the Torah. I thought that was inconceivable. But he says it. Okay, yes, what's your name?
Hillel.
Hillel, yes.
I was under the impression that the exemption from mitzvot was only mitzvot aseh.
Aha, you were under that impression. Many of you probably read, Ben obviously was under the impression because he was not worried about blind people wandering around murdering everyone in their beds. And he was worried about them not coming to Midian. That's exactly what that assumption is. So your assumption is not unprecedented. In the margins of the manuscript of this work called the Sefer HaMakriya Reishai Detrani, there is a note that the editor says is from one of the unknown holy people, but it means somebody who was dead and didn't leave their name. But they wrote in the margins as follows. They said, what? This is, his language is, Plia Niskavalu Chala. This is too astonishing for me to handle. How can one even consider the possibility that the one Rebbe who holds the blind people exempt from a mitzvah would exempt the blind even from the don'ts in the Torah, right? As they'd be like children, they would not be punished for even the big three, idolatry, adultery, and bloodshedding. That's inconceivable to him. Okay, it's inconceivable to this marginal note on the manuscript, but obviously Rabbi Yishai Detrani thought otherwise. Yishai Detrani said they're exempt from all mitzvot, including the negative commandments, including Baal Tosif, and presumably including murder. Yes. So again, this whole shiur takes place in the position within the mindset of positions we reject. We reject the idea that blind people are exempt. Right? Then it turns out we reject the possibility that position even said this.
Once you buy in, then you're obligated. Once you're saying that they're obligated, then they're obligated
It's a circularity. They're only obligated in Rabbanan Baal Tosif and not Deoraita Baal, right? The rabbis build in some kind of, you know, some kind of reflexive loop that exempts their own commandments from their own commandment of Baal Tosif. Don't add anything else to the Torah. Right? We have to do that generally as to how rabbis can add mitzvot, right? So we say except for a mitzvot added by rabbis. Yes?
Is there any way that a blind person can take it upon himself to work with the same point? Like, say, mitzvot applies to me in this specific situation, so I can add myself. I'm taking it upon myself to accept
it. So, you know, this Rabbi Joel Roth of the conservative movement tried about 35 years ago to make an argument that if you take a neder, that makes you obligated biblically. I thought it was wrong then, and I still think it's wrong. I think there are too many places where the Talmud distinguishes specifically between the obligation imposed by a neder and the obligation directly in the Torah. It's not the same thing. And besides, why would a blind person have to keep a neder? Yes, Avi.
Going back for a moment to this interpretation of Baal Tosif, which says that it means not performing mitzvot that you aren't commanded in with as if you were commanded.
Yeah.
I once saw something in Chiddush HaRashba, I think it was Masechet Rosh Hashanah.
Okay, yes.
Where it says that Baal Tosif means don't add any mitzvot as an individual, but communally mitzvot can be added. So it seems that, according to that, Baal Tosif is about adding mitzvot and not just about doing mitzvot that you're not commanded in as if you're commanded.
Okay, so now having seen it, it's interesting for me to... The Rashba is dealing with this, presumably is addressing directly this, the sugya which says this, which specifically defines it that way, that it's only violating a mitzvah in, right, doing a mitzvah that is otherwise an obligation and is invaded by others, bizmana or shlo bizmana. So I have to look at it.
The other thing is, isn't there a Rashi which says, which says like putting a fifth box in your tefillin or something?
Yes. So that's right, that's because you have multiple, it's as if you're wearing multiple tefillin at the same time. Mm-hmm. And the Rashba is probably talking about Yom Tov Sheni and how you can, right, how the rabbis could create obligate Yom Tov Sheni when the Gemara's parade example of Baal Tosif is sleeping in a sukkah on the eighth day. Right, which is doing something when it's not a mitzvah as if it were a mitzvah. Mm-hmm. I would think. That would be my instinct as to what that Rashba is saying. I don't have it in my head. Okay. Okay. Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman, if you know, was a 20th century figure, for his merit, pointing out that he was in America on a fundraising tour in the late 1930s, went back to Europe to be with his students, and so died in the Holocaust. He's a very very frum man. It's probably the best way to describe him. He was a deep believer, and he structured a theology that was very straightforward. He liked things to be very straightforward, and he had great faith. So you'll see how he addresses this issue. So he points out, first of all, he says that a question that really should have occurred to many of you. He said, so according to the Sefer HaMachriah, he doesn't have the Sefer HaMachriah, but the point is the same. According to the Sefer HaMachriah, we said that the reason that blind people can be obligated rabbinically is because even though their obligations should really be violations of the biblical commandment against adding to the Torah, against lo tosifu, is because they're not obligated in any commandments in the Torah, so therefore they're not obligated in Baal Tosif, and the rabbis can obligate them. Who notices where we all of a sudden got into a deep circular problem here? Nope, I already said that. You're already not right. Sorry, yes, Sam.
Without the Torah, what gives rabbinic law authority?
Why do you have to listen to rabbis? Because it says in the Torah, lo tasur mikol, right? You're not allowed to stray from the words of the rabbis. So you're right, it's great that the rabbis aren't violating anything. He's not violating anything because he's not obligated to Baal Tosif, but how can you have an obligation? All obligations come from the Torah, don't they? All rabbinic authority is just a derivation of the law in the Torah. Rabbinic authority comes because the Torah says don't stray from what they teach you left or right. So Rabbi Elchanan Wasserman comes along and says, what on earth is going on here? He actually doesn't say it about this. He actually has several other clever proofs. His interesting cases are, number one, he found a case where it seems that there was rabbinic legislation before the Torah was given. How can there be rabbinic legislation before the Torah was given? There's no rabbinic authority. And secondly, his really cool case of that is that we learned that really God said to Moshe that the Jews only had to be prepared for receiving the Torah through abstinence for 2 days, and but Moshe said 3 days. So the third day is a rabbinic addition, but it's before the Torah. How can that be? So Rabbi Wasserman says it must be that there is a way to root rabbinic authority not in the Torah. How can that be? Where do we get the idea that, where do we get rabbinic authority not in the Torah? So here's what he says. He says, according to what I have written, all fits well. As whatever the sages command, we know that this is also the will of God. And this matter fulfilling his will, all those who come into the world stand commanded regarding this from the beginning of their creation. And all that exists were created to do the will of the Creator. Okay, let me explain that, right? So Rabbi Wasserman says, you know, really, the fundamental thing about being a human being is being, right, created by God, means that your purpose is to fulfill God's will. What is God's will? So God put part of his will in the Torah. Okay. Is that everything God wants you to do in the Torah? No. Not everything that God wants you to do is in the Torah. There's other stuff that God wants you to do. Maybe he only wants you to do it at certain times in history. Maybe he wants it to have somewhat, right, a different level of authority. But there are other things that God wants you to do that are not in the Torah. How are you supposed to know those things? So the answer is, the Torah tells you, when it tells you Lo Tasur, it doesn't mean that you have an obligation to obey the rabbis because of their authority. It means that you're supposed to have faith that the rabbis always, what the rabbis say is always the will of God. Okay, let's get you the idea that Rabbi Wasserman is a very frum man, because he roots this in essentially rabbinic infallibility. Right, the rabbis will never get it wrong, so you should listen, right? And therefore, rabbinic authority is not rooted in the, right, in the commandedness of the Torah. Rabbinic authority is rooted in the fundamental commandedness of the human being. And God said that blind people are exempt from all the mitzvot in the Torah. That doesn't mean that blind people don't have to fulfill God's will. So if there are other things that are God's will that are not in the Torah, why shouldn't blind people have to fulfill them? So the rabbis get to do that. Okay. So that's a really fascinating notion in, right, in several ways. The first thing really is this idea that to be a human being is to, right, is to have the obligation to follow God's will. And the second stage is the rabbinic authority stems because they are accurate, not because they hold authority. Okay, so I want you to hold that in mind. And now we're going to turn to the last source, which is Rabbi Mordechai Feinstein. And Mordechai Feinstein, so the response of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein are published now in 9 volumes. Only 7 of them came out in his lifetime, and the 7th time was when he was already hospitalized. So there are debates about the reliability of volume 7 through 9. But it happens that in volume 9, there is also a section which is not from Rabbi Moshe Feinstein at all, but rather from his brother, Rabbi Mordechai Feinstein, who I am told by Rabbi Yehuda Sussman died in Siberia. As I always mention, that I have a soft spot for publications of rabbinic literature saved from Siberia, because my family legend is that my father's father, as a young man, had written a complete commentary on the Rambam's Mishneh Torah, but he lost it in Siberia when they were running away during the war. Never had the heart to write anything again. So I always have the hope that someday somebody will find my grandfather's manuscripts and publish it. So I really like it when people publish things saved from Siberia. And Rabbi Sussman claims that Rabbi Mordechai Feinstein was actually a very deep influence on his to become more famous brother, and was apparently going to write his doctorate on that. And based on this response to him, I would take it very seriously, the notion that he was going to be a very powerful figure, because I think this is an extraordinarily cool response to him. So let's read it together on page 4. Okay, so he says, we're talking about the nature of a blind person's exemption according to Rabbi Yehuda, resolving a second difficulty. What is the second difficulty? So he notices immediately, the second difficulty is, Eich yicholin alav l'takein, how could the rabbis impose obligation on the blind? Why would a blind person be obligated to listen to the rabbis? Kevan she'eino b'chol ha'torah, Since, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he believes, as the Sefer HaMachria did against the anonymous note, that blind people are exempt from all commandments, including the negative commandments, that he should also be exempt from Lo Tasur. So he said this can be explained on the basis of another analytic principle. And he comes up with a cool case. The case is as follows. So the Talmud deals with the question, what happens if, I like to take cases from life, what happens if your father specializes in lobster soup? Okay? And you have a major life cycle event coming up, and your father says, for this life cycle event, I want to make lobster soup and you better eat it. Okay, really I'm not making this story up. The actual story where this happens, as I am told first, secondhand, was somebody who actually insisted this on a bar mitzvah in a Reform synagogue, that he was going to cook lobster soup for his son's bar mitzvah. The rabbi protested and said, we don't allow lobster soup in the shul. There was a whole fight, and the solution was the rabbi got a sabbatical. So people can be very insistent, it seems, willing to pay like a whole year's rabbinic salary just so they can serve lobster soup at the bar mitzvah. So let's take this case, right? Your father says to you, "You're going to eat this lobster soup. And I'm going to be deeply, badly hurt if you don't eat this lobster soup." So what are you supposed to do? There is a mitzvah in the Torah of honoring your parents and of revering your parents. Your father tells you that you're really, really going to hurt his feelings if you don't eat the lobster soup. What are you supposed to do?
Not eat the soup.
Not eat the soup. Why are you not supposed to eat the soup? Okay, good, all right, good, all right. The Talmud actually frames it a little differently, but that's a very sharp way of framing it. The Talmud's way of framing it is there's a pasuk in the Torah which says, Ishimo ve'aviv tiro. Ani Hashem. So why does it say Ani Hashem at the end of the verse, which begins by saying honor your parents or revere your parents? Because it tells you that your parents are also obligated in God's honor. Kulchem chayavim bichvodi. So because your parents are obligated in God's honor just as you are, their command to you, which in violation of the Torah, is an illegitimate command. And you don't have to follow it. Because in a sense, they're forfeiting their right to honor by abandoning their own obligation to honor. So it comes along by Feinstein and says, aha, but what happens if your father is blind? According to Rabbi Yehuda, there is nothing wrong for him in eating lobster soup, or for that matter, in putting stumbling blocks before the blind. So, therefore, it's not true that your father is obligated in the honor of God just like you are. So now you should have to eat the lobster soup. Okay, Rabbi Feinstein says in a marvelous rabbinic turn of phrase, he says, "V'zeh davar chadash me'od." This is a very new thing. Okay, this is said in the tone of voice in which you. But if a politician asks you whether he should make a certain speech, and you say, that would be very courageous. It doesn't mean go ahead. Right? So this would be a very new thing. He says, this is wrong. Right? He goes on, he says, Amarti shezet ta'ut. This, right, it's a very, right, he says that's a very clever argument, but he does not think it is possible that in the end you should eat the lobster soup. Yes, what did you want to say? Sorry, I forgot your name already.
Pinchas,
yes.
Go through with the logic on that lines, wouldn't you end up like going back and saying then if you're not commanded in any of the mitzvah, then like belief in God and just generally being identified with the people, like how is there, is that like excommunicate blind people from where does it
end? And that's why Tosfot says this is inconceivable. Right? This is that Tosfot says if that's the case, right, you're basically cutting them off from the Jewish people. But that's a real challenge, because why should that be? Because they can still do everything, right? They can still do everything. Why is it obligation that's necessary? So Rabbi Feinstein says, and this is parallel to what Rabbi Wasserman said. Rabbi Feinstein said, you're right, we have it wrong. Really, blind people are obligated in the honor of God. They're obligated to do the will of God.
They just don't have mitzvot. That's a fascinating claim. What does that mean? It says the same kind of rhetoric as Rabbi Wasserman. He says that being a created being means that you have an obligation to honor God, to fulfill the will of God. You exist in a state of, for I think the best Hebrew term is mechuyavut. You exist in a state of obligation, but that you exist in a state of obligation doesn't mean that you have any specific obligations. Okay, analogy I give to this is what you are is somebody who's in the reserves, but never does miluim. Right? So the army could always call you up. But until they call you up, you have no obligations other than to stand ready should they call you up. And they never call you up. It's possible to conceive of religion this way. I know this because years ago I was on a plane to Israel and I took out my Gemara and I was learning. And the Israeli next to me turned to me and said, "It's really good that you're doing that." And being young, I looked at him and I said, "Nuan, what about you?" And he said, no, I don't have to." "Why not?" He said, "Because I have a deal with God. I am God's soldier. When God needs a soldier, he can call on me. And until then, the deal is in exchange for my agreeing to be God's soldier, he leaves me alone." Right, so he understood that in principle, he was obligated to obey God's will, but he had no mitzvot. Until God calls him up for miluim. So, Feinstein says, that is fundamentally what the condition of the blind according to Rabbi Yehuda is. The condition of the blind according to Rabbi Yehuda is that nothing that you do can take away your fundamental human condition of being obligated to fulfill God's will. But it is possible to be in a condition where you have this obligation, but God never tells you anything specific that he needs you to do. Okay, now Rabbi Feinstein comes up with this fascinating redefinition of rabbinic authority. He says what rabbinic authority is not that God commanded you not to stray from the rabbis, and then when the rabbis command you, that becomes a subsidiary of God's commandment not to stray. What it means is that God, to take an unfortunate image from Tanakh, God took off his signet ring and handed it to the rabbis. So the rabbis have the authority to command. Right? God gives them the authority to command in his place. So therefore, he says, blind people have an obligation to obey commands. It's just that God didn't give them any directly. But God gave the rabbis the authority to command. They can command blind people just like they can command anybody else, because God could command you. He just chose not to. The rabbis choose to. And that's his ultimate solution to the whole problem. Okay, so now let's talk about where we end up. So the first thing you end up, I think, is the fascinating, what you call anthropology of Judaism. Because Rabbi Feinstein holds, as Rabbi Wasserman, that to be human is to be in a condition of obligation to God, of mechuyavut. So that is nothing, right? There's no difference between Jews and non-Jews in terms of your relationship to God of obligation. The difference between Jews and non-Jews is whether those obligations have been concretized in commands. Right? What makes you Jewish, and that's what drives Tosfot, what makes you Jewish is not obligation, but mitzvot, which are the concretization of that obligation. So that's a really strong claim. If you wanted to put it in a particular theological framework, so Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's Zecher Tzadik Livrachel often said that what the essence of Judaism is the relationship between human beings and God as commanded and commander. So that's a really deep question. Right? What is the difference between being obligated to do the will of God, which is all human beings, and obeying God as commander, which is what right, which they understand as the unique feature of being Jewish, such that even though blind people have all the obligations to do the will of God, and therefore very likely they're not allowed to murder people, they're just not commanded not to. And so it requires you to come right, and this is a very, very complicated notion, particularly in modernity. Right, to say that the root of Jewishness is
the notion that there is some a different obligation is created by the reality of command, even though obligations to God exist without the command. Right, so that's one, I think, very powerful notion that's worth thinking about. It's very countercultural to root a religious relationship specifically in command. That's what people tell me is fundamentally what is unmodern, which is all about choice and autonomy. So really worth figuring out how you can solve that in different contexts. You can listen to the lecture I gave at YU last night, which was on Rav Soloveitchik's attempt to square this idea with the notion of autonomy. You can look at footnote 80 in Halachic Man, which will send you to Herman Cohen's Das Problem der Jüdische Sittenlehre, and then you can look that up, and if you read German, you're good in good shape. If not, you can look up the English word autotely, A-U-T-O-T-E-L-Y, which shows up, I think, probably only in three places on the web, and that might give you a clue or might not. It's worth trying to figure it out. You can also look at an essay by Kenneth Siskin in a collection called Autonomy and Judaism. But even if you don't want to do the fancy philosophic research, you can just think about it. Right? Is this a compelling notion that what makes the Jewish religious experience unique is the phenomenon of tzivui, such that Tosfot can plausibly claim that to put somebody in a situation where they have a relationship with God, they are mechuyav, but they don't have a Jewish relationship. It also, one has to acknowledge it to figure out whether this makes the gender problem much worse, whether it undermines lots of apologetics about mitzvah v'osa versus eina mitzvah v'osa, or whether Tosfot is sufficient by claiming that as long as you have that relationship with some mitzvot, nobody says that your life is better if all your obligations are that way. God doesn't have to command you to do everything. It's also important to have ways in which you fulfill the will of God not commanded. Right, so that's a second. Right, the other issue that really needs to be addressed is the nature of rabbinic authority. And you have three models. One model is the rabbinic authority is just a subsidiary of the Torah. I think that's what we usually call the classical model. One model is Rabbi Wasserman's model, which is rabbinic authority is by virtue of their accuracy and only works as long as you have faith in them. So on the right, Rabbi Wasserman's argument in a sense can undermine itself, because if you don't have that kind of faith, it's hard to say why you should listen. So it's one of the arguments that makes sense for the people who make them, but it doesn't really work for people who don't already share his assumptions. But you can use it as a reasonable sociological explanation of why rabbinic authority is so attenuated. It doesn't work if you don't have that faith. Or you have, and I think is the liberating but also frightening notion of Rabbi Feinstein, which is that rabbinic authority is not rooted in accuracy. It's not rooted in the Torah. It's really right. It's rooted in God's willingness to allow human beings to play His role. And that might also tie into, might be that because of the fundamental notion that that autonomy really is a value, and human beings have to be able to create their own laws in some sense. So that's part of why God gives human beings the right to command, so that we can have a religion which is not entirely heteronomous, where the norms are imposed, but where human beings are participants in the creation of the law, and not just in its exposition. Okay, those are the major points I wanted to make tonight. I should take 2 minutes for propaganda. So propaganda. I run something called the Center for Modern Torah Leadership, which puts out lots of Torah, which hopefully you've all signed up for by now. Also runs far and away the coolest program in the world. I should probably turn the paper off that. Far and away the coolest program in the world, which is a 6-week program called the.